Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes, episode number 46. We are just 6 weeks away from having done this for a full year, and I'm joined as always, as I have been on every single Monday. Not Monday, we don't do this on a Monday. I've been joined to talk about every single Monday Night Raw so far with David J. McCutcheon. Hi, David.
Now, that's not true, Kenny. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but one time I had heart surgery, and I couldn't be there for that Monday. So you, sir, are a liar.
Oh, that's right. You slacked off. I forgot about that. and also, important announcement to begin the Raw Rundown, because next week, David is slacking off again.
It's
because
true.
David,
I know.
David has decided that a job that pays him a lot of money is better than this job. So he's going to go and play his little games and, you know, develop things for the future. Meanwhile, over here on Inside the Ropes, I thought I was going to be left on my own to cover Monday Night Raw. But that's not going to happen because somebody else has stepped in. Somebody who cares about Inside the Ropes, unlike David J. McCutcheon. And that is why next week, for the first time ever on Inside the Ropes, do you hear that sound? The Kamala bowling ball has just been issued, and it is knocking over David J. McCutcheon. Next week, Robert and I covering Monday Night Raw. There you go. Man. Fuck you, David.
Just so we're clear, you're welcome, everybody. I got Robert back on the podcast single-handedly. All I had to do was step away. So that's good. That's excellent. You're welcome. You're welcome, Kenny, for the rating spike that's about to happen. Wouldn't have happened if not for me leaving. Second of all, yes, I am leaving Inside the Ropes for a better opportunity because I've decided I'm going to fight the WWE tooth and nail. As you well know, Kenny, the WWE is starting 105 Live, where they are going to take all of the cruiserweights and they're going to pit them against the midgets. And the WWE has come in and they have just absolutely plundered my poor MMW Revival roster. They took Minnie Vater from me with a T. And everybody else, the Louisville Leprechaun is gone. There's so many guys. Wee Willie Winky is all we have left. And you know what? That's what I'm doing next week. I'm going on a business trip to Los Angeles to revitalize my company, and I'm taking it to them. We are going to have, in the parking lot of PWG, we are going to have a makeshift MMW event. So, right there you go.
I think all of us can agree.
I'm going to make a lot of money on this.
The all David has left is his wee Willy Winky. Nothing else.
Damn anyway. It, we're taking it to him. We're fighting the man. Fight the power, Kenny.
It's the night after Extreme Rules, David.
And it is. Well, sure.
Wilkes-Bear, Pennsylvania. What the fucking kind of name is Wilkes-Bear?
MMW ran a few successful shows in Wilkes-Bear, thank you.
I mean, how successful can you be if you're running Wilkes-Bear? That's like running in Des Moines, Iowa.
It was our biggest show we've ever run.
Oh, for fuck's sake. What, did you have a 5'2" wrestler?
no, we drew 31 paid customers, Kenny. That's a lot of money. At $1.50
each. That's a bigger crowd, more money than we drew with Sonny, so fair to us. Respect.
And about the same amount of Wee Willie Winkies, if I were to take a guess.
That's
and
true.
A few extra digits too, maybe.
Well, Sonny's not shy of a digit. Upper arse on Skype for a tenner. But nothing will ever make me more uncomfortable than the moment where Sonny on stage tried to like sell or pimp out her sister, and I use that in inverted commas, because when I say sister, this is a woman who is of complete different ethnic origin. Like, she was a completely different race than Sonny.
Sure,
and
sure.
They were about 27 years apart in age.
Oh.
Which meant the girl was about 25 years old.
And, thank God. I thought it was going the other way.
Oh, no. Well, she doesn't hang out with Missy Hyatt anymore.
Ah!
They don't do their Wrestling Vixens website where they get their tits out. But anyway, I digress. Is Wilkes-Barre, like, is that like a big place? I'll give it this though. The Mohegan Sun Arena is a good fucking arena name. I give them that.
It is. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that. It is a casino, and so hence why Enzo was making reference to the casino deal. So yeah,
is it just me? Can you imagine? We need to make a pact that if this ever happens, you and I just go to it, no matter how terrible it is. Imagine if they did Raw at Caesar's Palace.
Oh, Lord mercy. Could you imagine? We would lose so much money and so much dignity. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of dignity left, Kenny, but...
Speak for yourself. I mean, well, you know.
I mean, you did do a show with Sonny's.
So. Listen.
And then, hey, that's something we both have in common, though. We both booked Sonny. You booked her for a meet and greet, and I booked her for a Skype session.
And you got more in your return than I did.
I got a load on my return, let me tell you.
I still remember after the show, and Sonny was like, so we're going to go and find a strip club. You want to join us? I was like, nah, I'm going to get a bag of chips. See you later. And I had a steak pie supper, which, as Robert pointed out, was probably similar to an experience with Sonny in a strip club, just a little less gristle. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Raw. Night after Extreme. I apologize to all the women who are listening to this that are just... that have to deal with this, but trust me, if you'd had to go through that experience, I'm due some jokes. I'm allowed.
You've earned it.
So, Raw opens. Obviously, Samoa Joe is the number one contender to the Universal Championship. Booker T appears to have replaced David Otunga, because David Otunga was in the pre-show at Extreme Rules, but he's not back in the commentary. I know Finn Martin is a big fan of Booker T's commentary. I'm not really sure why.
I am not.
So I'm going to quiz Finn about that this week and find out why he believes that Booker T is doing commentary. But anyway, so we open the show with Bray Wyatt. He heads out to the ring. He talks about last night was the beginning of the end. Oh, God.
Same old diatribe.
Yeah, he talks about, you know, he had a chance to slay the beast, and they took it from him, but he's still here. He's still the god that he's always been, which... Anyway. I figured out with Bray Wyatt is the guy that's like a supervisor at Dollar Mania store, or like Poundland, and he's like, I'm still the supervisor, and you're like, yeah, but that's a shite job, mate. You need to move up. You need to go to Walmart, or you need to go to, like, Asda, and you need to get a better supervisor gig.
You nailed it, though. That's totally what it is.
I fully believe that Bray Wyatt could just dress as Bray Wyatt and work in Dollarama or Dollar Mania.
Yeah, nobody, yeah, he could work at Family Dollar and nobody would even turn a blind eye.
Because he could work in the gardening section, just have his lantern. I'm here. Be great.
So
he does a little kind of promo, and he's casting judgment on Balor and Joe and Rollins and Roman, and then Roman comes out. Roman gets more boos than cheers because the audience are over 14 and have penises. Some of them. Mm-hmm. He's like, I know quite a few women who like wrestling, and what I like about it, and I assume a lot of the women who listen to this podcast are the same, and there are guys as well, but for the purposes of this conversation, you know, it's like if you watch Raw in 1997, you get Shawn Michaels comes out, and you hear the high-pitched scream of the women, and you don't hear the men cheering him, right? You hear the high, and I feel with Roman Reigns, all the women were like, woo! And it's like, listen, you can want to fuck him, but no, he's not an effective character. You can have that distinction. It's like, I remember there's a girl I know, and she's like, I would let Roman Reigns destroy me. She was like, I would let him do anything he wanted to either side of me. However, I'm still not going to fucking cheat him at a wrestling show. And I was like, that is why we're friends.
Exactly. You can make the distinction between your genitalia and your brain. That's something you can do.
Exactly.
There's no doubt.
But Roman comes out, Bray's laughing, and Reigns says that, do you want to know what happens to people that run their mouth in my yard? This. And then he punches Wyatt. And that leads us to a Roman Reigns Bray Wyatt match. The match goes 20 minutes, and at the beginning I was kind of like, oh god, I actually thought it was a really good match, to be fair. The finish, obviously, is one that you and I in particular are going to probably groan at, because we are not huge fans of the Roman Reigns character, but we are big fans of Bray Wyatt, so obviously for us, we're going to be more, oh damn. But like, you know, I get it, like, you know, I knew going into it when they had a match that Roman was going to win, and at least it was very competitive, and it took a lot for him to beat Bray, which is good. Bray got to kick out some Superman punches. They had a really good kind of last 5 minutes of the exchange. What did you think of this opening match on Raw to start the show?
I mean, you know, the match is fine, but that's not why we're, like, invested, though, right? Like, that's... Oh, man, I'm so tired of Bray Wyatt coming out and just being the biggest joke on the card, right? You know, I was so invested in this guy. And then he just continually comes out and lies to people. We touched on how lying is bad in wrestling on the Extreme Rules podcast, right? Because whenever you lie to people, you lose your credibility with them. You have to be honest. You know, we were addressing the Bayley situation. The way that you win people over with that is you have them be honest. And Bray Wyatt comes out and goes, I'm a god! A god of fucking what? A toilet bowl? Like, I don't understand exactly what your appeal is at this point, man. And it's so disappointing because he grasps his character so well. And it's just continually shit on by the WWE. And then I thought that it was kind of fitting that Roman Reigns came out and was just all like, oh, hey, this is my yard. This is what happens. And he just punches him immediately, not completely cold cocks him, knocks him out, eliminates him from the fucking opening bell, essentially. And, you know, it was just, it's sort of fitting. It's apropos that's what happens to the Bray Wyatt character. You know, he's so concerned about his own diatribe that whenever the shit hits the fan, he immediately just gets punched and knocked out and made a fool of, so to speak. So,
I think,
yeah.
The difficulty you have is when you have, you know, a 3-hour show every week and you have all these top guys, like, if you're gonna make them fight each other, then people have to win, people have to lose. I understand them wanting to have Roman get a big win the night after the show, if he didn't.
Sure.
You know, I get it. I think the thing is, like, I just feel like Bray Wyatt is not the guy to be that fall guy, but then, you know, to be fair, I thought his promo was pretty dire before it, so I can't really...
Yeah.
It's not like I can be like, what are you doing? The promo was so good, you know, because the promo is just him spouting the stuff as he always has.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing new or interesting with it, right?
But I do. If we manage to get that sit down interview, you know, like a kind of Mick Foley sit down interview that I've been watching in Retro Raw, my God, it could do wonders for Bray Wyatt, you know. And because you look at last year, that night where he was a babyface, and funnily enough, he teamed with Roman Reigns, and my God, people just got behind him.
The crowd was eating up everything he was saying. Like, and it, during this show, they were cheering him. I turned to Val and I said, there's your baby face. They don't got to look too damn far for the next top baby face. He's sitting right there.
But he is.
And he already has the Bayley thing where he constantly loses. So he's already halfway there.
But he is the new, he is kind of the new Undertaker in a way, you know, because he is that kind of mythical, you know, guy that's not quite... You know, he's not a guy you would see down the shops buying his pasta, you know?
No. Yeah, it's very difficult for them to tread into this heel scenario that they've continually dug for him. Mm-hmm. And because he's just a natural babyface at this point. I don't see how anyone can argue it. You know what I mean?
No, I think you're right. So, you know, and then we'll get into where Bray's going in a little bit. Charlie Caruso interviews Enzo and Cass. Enzo talked about being, you know, the mystery attackers, but they're having a tag team match tonight with the club, so we'll see how it goes. But Enzo said he didn't have the scoop like Corey Graves does. And Cass talked about, you know, it's pretty insulting that people think it might be him. He said Enzo's like a little brother to him. He'd watch Enzo's back all the time. And then Enzo obviously tried to hit on Charlie, and she sadly looked interested, which is a shame, because Charlie could do better.
No. See, I thought she looked kind of disgusted. Like it looked to me like, at first, whenever she was talking to him, she was just sort of like putting up with it, as opposed to outright telling him no and having to deal with the confrontation like a lot of women have to, right? And then the second he turned away, she was like, God, what a fucking schmuck.
I hope so. I hope that's...
Yeah. Go back and watch it and just imagine that scenario. And I think that's what it was.
Then we you know, Michael Cole's quizzing Corey Graves about the Enzo thing, and he's saying, you know, he's not wanting to talk about it. We get Kurt Angle on his phone backstage. Alexa comes in. She says that she wants to do a This Is My Life segment. Then Kurt Angle says, no, that's a terrible idea. This is one of the worst segments in the history of Raw. That's why I love Kurt Angle. He's allowed to say that it was a terrible segment. And then he...
It's good that they buried that, like, right off the bat, though,
oh, yeah, they
right?
should. They should. They should.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Yeah,
it's like
they,
when,
yeah, they shit all over
It's
it,
like when the New Day shat over the Old Day thing. Because
yeah.
And it made you like the New Day more, because you were like, oh, they're taking the piss out of this thing that we all thought was... pretty dire, you know, and it worked. So anyway, Kurt Angle said, you know, you promised Nia Jax a title match, so, and Alexa's acting like she didn't, just, no, I didn't. And so Kurt Angle books her in a match against Nia Jax later on the show. We'll talk about Kurt in a little bit. Elias Samson's in the ring, and he's, you know, asking, you know, who wants to walk with Elias and all that sort of stuff, and he's playing the guitar. When Dean Ambrose interrupts some of his music, he says that he hits Elias Samson with the microphone, punches him, gets rid of him, says he wants a rematch for the title. Miz and Maurice are on the screen saying they wouldn't give him the title shot because they would be celebrating the Intercontinental Championship comeback tour. And then while that's happening, Elias Samson attacks Ambrose, and it's all kind of breaking loose. And then backstage, Dean Ambrose is asking Kurt Angle to show Miz's locker room because he wants to go and attack him, and then Angle basically makes Ambrose leave the building because he's going to let Miz and Maurice have their celebration. I thought this was a pretty fun segment.
It was fun. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, and I mean, for someone who is not hugely invested in seeing more Dean Ambrose versus Miz matches, I've got to give them props. They are making this really, really fun. Like, they're doing a really good job. And making it feel fresh.
Yeah, somehow, I mean, against all odds, this was a good segment. Kurt Angle's excuse of, I just don't want to have to deal with Maurice, was pretty fun. I know it's stupid, and, like, you know, we shouldn't be okay with that, you know, and it should be like, well, if you're the boss, blah, 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 I don't care. I thought it was really funny. Just the segment, like, later on in the show with the big celebration. Are we tackling that now, or are we going to tackle that then?
Let's wait for that, because that's a great discussion to have.
That one's fun. But this whole setup, I thought it was good. Everybody was great during this, too. Everybody.
Ambrose has left the building, so he's gone for now. Samoa Joe makes his way out to the ring. He's got like a kind of half and half reaction. Some people are booing him, some people are chatting Joe. He says that he doesn't fear Brock Lesnar. He's actually envious of him. He wants everything Lesnar has. He wants to have the schedule where he doesn't have to show up every week in front of the people. He wants Paul Heyman. He wants Paul Heyman to run all his errands for him. He wants the Universal Championship. And he said he'll stare Lesnar in the eye and take his title from him at Great Balls of Fire. And then Paul Heyman does his ladies and gentlemen bit. He comes out and he says, you know, you're the number one contender, you know, and so you should be. And he said, you're the destroyer and you're a badass. And he was basically just, you know, sucking up to Samoa Joe. And then he says, you know, can I get in the ring? Can I get in the ring? Is that okay? And he basically, you know, brings up that there was the chance to do Lesnar and Finn Balor, which would have been like a Rocky story. That would be the best case scenario. And Joe is the worst case scenario for Brock Lesnar because he doesn't give a damn. But then he makes out that Lesnar is Samoa Joe's worst case scenario. Samoa Joe, you want Brock Lesnar, you got Brock Lesnar. They shake hands. Heyman turns to leave, and then Joe does this great thing where he drops the mic and calmly sort of tells Paul Heyman off mic that he was disappointed in Lesnar for not being there. Something very bad was going to happen to him, and he told him to take a message back to his client, and then he put the coquina clutch on Paul Heyman until he passed out. The fans chanted, "We want Brock," and Joe picked up the mic, and the mic wasn't even on. Like, the mic...
This was ad-lib.
They had to get the mic back on for Samoa Joe. Fans are chatting, "We want Brock," and Joe just picked up the mic and said, "So do I." Dropped the mic and left. This was sensational.
This was the best... This may sound like hyperbole, but coming off of it, and now that I've had time to digest it, best segment of Raw in 2017 thus far. That's ultimately what I'm going with. This was so good. Joe is one of the best natural speakers. I love his diction. I love his cadence. The way he delivers lines sounds so convincing and so cerebral. It's like he's trying to just hammer a nail into your skull and plant a seed of doubt. The way that he... I love the delivery of it, that I want everything that you have. I thought that was a really good message, and even Paul Heyman as a manager. And then whenever he grabbed Paul by the back of the neck and just started very calmly describing what was going to happen, "I'm going to start choking you by the throat, and your eyes are going to cross, you're going to pass out, and then I want you to go, Paulie," the way he called him, Paulie. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, I love it. I want you to go, Paulie, and tell Brock in the way that only you can what happened. Oh, my God. This is just money. I am, like, whenever Joe won, I was like, that's cool. You know, that's a nice little feud to hold Brock over until Finn or, you know, Braun or somebody of that nature is ready for him. No. I think Joe deserves that spot. This was convincing. I am all aboard the Samoa Joe train. I want him to beat him for the damn title. I don't think he's going to, but I want him to do it.
When he was coming down to when he was leaving the ring at the end of this segment, I thought back to something that I thought about, I want to say 9 months ago, and he was or maybe even a year ago now. Probably about a year ago, and he was having the matches with Finn Balor in NXT, and I remember just thinking, I never thought I would get to see Samoa Joe in NXT, and then I got Samoa Joe in NXT, and I was like, oh, this is really cool, and then he still worked indies for a little while, and it was like, he's getting to keep his name, because he was one of the first guys, people forget, he was one of the first guys that got to keep his name.
No, it was him and AJ.
And he was before AJ, so he got it first. He was like, he came in 2015, and he was... You know, and then he became NXT champion, and you're like, "Oh, okay, like this is cool." And he was in NXT, and I remember thinking, you know, it's such a shame that he's probably never going to make it to the main roster. Like, he's probably never going to get there, realistically.
Yeah.
And then he debuts in the main roster, and you're like, "Fuck, he's actually here. This is mental." And then he's not on WrestleMania, and I kind of was like, "Do you know what? I get it. Like, he's older, and they maybe just don't have that many plans for him." And I, like, it's almost like I didn't allow myself to get excited. And in my head, I was going, you know, they're never going to do Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe, because that's a match that I really, really want to see. They're never going to do it. And then I hear the bet nods are Joe's going to win. And I hate hearing the bet nods, by the way. So if
I managed to avoid the betting odds, actually.
And I'm
going to
say, like, genuinely, if I'm going to tweet out for the next pay-per-view, please do not send me betting odds. And if somebody responds and gives me the betting odds, I'm just going to block them because I can't really be bothered.
Yeah, right, right. Well, hey, you're given a fair warning at that point.
Exactly. But like, I never allowed myself to get excited about it. And then he wins the five-way. And even then I thought, well, okay, it's a match for Brock Lesnar, but he's not really going to be positioned as something. And then they did this, and I was just like, nothing in this company happens without Vince approving it. And Vince approved this. And that's a big thing for me. And I'm just really excited. I don't care if it's one match or if it's more or whatever. If I get to see Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe go at it in a competitive match, I just think it's going to be great.
This isn't going... We already discussed this on Patreon, but this is not going to be a squash, you guys. It's not. This is going to be a very competitive, hard-hitting, Japanese strong-style type of contest. There's going to be a lot of striking. There's going to be a lot of stuff that makes you uneasy. A lot of stuff that will leave your stomach in shambles because you're going to watch this, and it's going to make you feeling like you have to throw up at some point. Because these two are going to beat the living shit out of each other. And you can hold me to that. That's going to happen. And it's going to be amazing. And Joe's going to lose, but he's going to come out a winner. He's going to win over a lot of that crowd because he's not a part-timer, and yet he can hang with him in terms of being a badass. He can hang with the UFC darling Brock Lesnar as a badass. And it's going to be phenomenal.
I'm very excited about it. Kurt Angle's pissed off at Samoa Joe backstage. You know, why did you do that? And then Joe said, you know, he's going to take out anyone who gets in his way of him getting to Brock Lesnar. And Joe said, you know, the only question is, are you in my way? Which is a great line. And especially given that they had that, you know, the best performing matches in TNA's history, 2006, Angle and Joe. Seth Rollins comes in, says that Angle wasn't, but he was in his way. He's beat Joe before, and he had no problem beating him again. I know a lot of people are very upset that Seth Rollins beat Samoa Joe. I'm less upset about it because I don't think I didn't feel like he beat him convincingly enough that it's a problem for me.
What's kind of funny is in my mentions, I was one of the people who was upset that Seth Rollins beat Samoa Joe, as you well know. And it's funny because in my mentions today, I had about five different people tell me, David, I hate to admit it, but you were right. He shouldn't have beat Samoa Joe.
And I get it. And I'm not saying that it's what I would have done. It's not. But I don't have as much of an issue with it as I know a lot of other people do.
Right.
But... they decided here to do a rematch, which we will get into later on. Sheamus and Cesaro, the Raw Tag Team Champions, took on Heath Slater and Rhino. Heath Slater and Rhino were defeated in about 90 seconds, which is exactly how long it should have taken Sheamus and Cesaro to dispose of the mid-40s widest man on the planet and Heath Slater. Anything to say about this? It was just a squash.
It was a squash. It made me feel bad for Heath Slater and Rhino because they actually had steam and they had creative on SmackDown, and this is just how they're going to be treated now. You know what I mean? And for better or worse, you could argue that this is the way they needed to be treated from the outset, but, you know, it is what it is, I guess. I wasn't too in touch with the promo that Sheamus and Cesaro cut after this match. I didn't think it was that great, but I think a lot of that is you just put it up against the best segment of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I had no problem with it. Like, I've said before, I thought the Heath Slater joke had, like, one note in it, and I thought it did really well, but
of course.
Me, I'm like, I'm cool with Heath Slater and Rhino in this role, because, like, even though they're getting beat here in a squash match on TV, if I'm going to a house show, a Raw house show, Heath Slater and Rhino in the opening match, I'm going to be on my feet.
No doubt, man.
They're taking over the R-Truth Goldust role, which is fine because they're
That is exactly right, actually. Yeah, I didn't even think of that, but you nailed it.
And there's a role for that, you know. I mean,
there totally is.
Rhino is paid, right? Just to break this down, Rhino is being paid six figures.
Oh,
to come. Well, you know, he's in a WWE contract. You're not getting paid less than that. You're in six figures a year to come to an arena, get dressed, come out to the ring, have your entrance, get pulled off the ring apron, and go to the back. Yeah, he should.
That's a life that we could all hope to achieve.
He
one
should
day,
leave. He should leave and go back to the Indies, where he can get mucked about by promoters and have to work in front of 45 people. What an idiot he is! I'd take him out of a spot in a heartbeat. Anyway.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt.
TJP wants to wants to cash in his opportunity against Neville because, you know, this was their deal. He was going to get a championship opportunity. He mauled Austin Aries. You know, it's his time. And then Neville said, look, I'm a man of my word. If you go and take care of Mustafa Ali, I'll go and speak to Kurt Angle. We'll get it sorted. TJP beats Mustafa Ali pretty quickly in a couple of minutes. And then after it, Neville comes out. Neville said he spoke to Kurt Angle about the match, and he's the king of the cruiserweights, but not a medical worker. And then TJP was like, well, we'll go backstage, we'll talk to Kurt Angle together. And then Neville attacks him from behind, batters him, and says he'll face him in 205 Live. Neville is so good as the king
Like I said, I want to see Neville compete for like some real actual titles and not just the cruiserweight deal, man. Because I love him. He's so good. He's just so damn talented, man.
I like him as the king, though. That's my thing. It's like Neville in this division can be the king. If Neville was not in the division, he would be like mid. Like, I get where you're coming from. I think I know where it would go, so I'm happier seeing him in this.
Yeah, I know where it would go to, but damn it, I can't help but want bigger things.
Neville is like the boy or the girl who's like 17, and we're like you're like Neville's girlfriend, right? And he's 17. You're both in a relationship, and you want to stay with Neville, right? You really want to stay with him, but.
Sure.
I'm sitting looking at it going, I know if Neville leaves you and goes to university somewhere else, it's never going to work. It's only going to be good when you're together and he's not left. If Neville leaves the cruiserweight division, it's not going to go well. Keep him in your little pocket. Keep your relationship.
You're breaking my heart here with these heartbreaking scenarios, Kenny.
I mean, I realized midway through I don't think my scenario really makes sense, but let's move on, because I don't think it's entirely bulletproof. But anyway, moving on. We get another Shattered Dreams production. We're back to 1995 Goldust, and I'm fucking loving every bit of it.
Oh, you should have saw how furiously I was masturbating to this, Kenny. I mean, you did see. You paid for the Skype session, but...
Mate, if I had to watch you chug on Skype, you'd be paying me, I can assure you. Fucking hell. You're not eye-raping me with that. So he said, you know...
You know, I hate whenever I pop myself, Kenny. I hate it, but I'm so damn funny that I do it.
You love when you pop yourself. Goldust says that he took offense to R-Truth thinking he'd sit in the director's chair. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Consider me smitten. Goldust says, you know, that he sees the truth in the bigger motion picture. And, he says the Golden Age is back. Another great promo from Goldust.
I'm loving it. I think it's so good, though, for real, man.
Raw has made me want to see Goldust versus R-Truth. I don't care what people say. Goldust, Raw can do some good, because I never thought I'd be into this.
Never in 1,000 years, but I was disappointed that it wasn't on the main show the other day.
Mm-hmm.
The pay-per-view that they were planning. I'm like, man, I never would have suspected that, would you?
Nope, never in a million years.
I mean, fuck.
Mickie James and Dana Brooke are backstage, because apparently if you don't get used, you just become pals. And they were speaking to Sasha Banks about her dance moves. Alexa Bliss comes up and she's like trying to be friends with them. They're not into it. They're going to come to a ringside and watch the match with Nia Jax, because you know she was saying we've got a Nia Jax problem. They were like, no, you've got a Nia Jax problem, and they were going to come down to ringside. They're just pawns in Alexa Bliss's game. Alexa Bliss is clever. They're idiots, appears to be the message. Kurt Angle comes out, pulls away Corey Graves from the announce desk, points out his phone again, and you know the mystery continues. I like the mystery of this, and they're not really giving us too much more. They're making us think about it. Mike Rome asks Kurt Angle, you know, to talk about it. He says it's a private matter. he leaves the arena, but as he leaves the arena, Dean Ambrose stops the door from closing and re-enters. This is good.
It's setting it up. It's setting it up.
We get Kalisto versus Titus O'Neil. Kalisto beats Titus in about a minute and a half because Kalisto, when Titus is trying to hold the tights, Kalisto ends up getting one up on him and holding his tights and getting the win. Now, have you seen the Raw Fallout video that is the most glorious of all the Raw Fallout videos? We got tweeted it.
We did get tweeted it. So, oh my yes, God. Indeed I have.
Charlie
Holy
Caruso.
Shit.
Charlie Caruso.
Explain this to the average listener here.
So, Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews walk into this room at a table, and there appears to be about 20 chairs. They are holding a press conference for the Titus brand. They ask who has the first question, and we pan over and see there is only one reporter at the entire press conference, and that is Charlie Caruso. And she has her hand up very enthusiastically to ask.
She wants that first question.
And she got it. She managed to, you know, keep everybody else at bay and get that first question in. And she talks about, you know, there's like a 1-in-3 win ratio. So, like, does that not devalue the Titus brand? And who's going to buy shares in it? And Titus O'Neil, like, stops the press conference and leaves. And Charlie Caruso played, like, a great little bit of comedy here where she played the straight reporter but did it in such a good way that it was funny.
No, she was really funny here. Like, my God, like, this was so funny. Mm-hmm. For real. Who would have thought that she was... Do you think, like, that was completely, like, she was winking to the camera now whenever she was in fucking Blackpool?
No, I do. No, I think she actually might be a genius.
Because after seeing this, I was like... Because before that, I was like, oh, you know, she was just doing her job and trying to make the best of it. Now I think maybe she was in on that shit. maybe she was in on the joke. Maybe she is a lot smarter than we gave her credit for. Because this was great. This was really funny. If you guys haven't seen it, I did retweet it. I believe it was Karen, or who was it? It was a Karan?
Karan.
Yeah, he tweeted it, and then I retweeted that. So go on my Facebook, my Twitter, at Zoopsoul, ZOOPSOUL, got to get that plug in. And check it out. It is legitimately really funny. You're going to love
funny.
It.
Very funny.
Yeah.
We cut backstage. Big Cass has been laid out. Referee shows up, checks on him. Enzo is like, what's happened? Cass handed Enzo a chain. Enzo said whoever attacked him a few weeks ago brought the chain with them. Enzo had to go and find a partner. So anyway, this happens, but what's so great about this is that there are multiple people this could be.
Yeah, this could go in any direction, really.
And all of them, like, could work out plausibly. It could be Cass. It could be The Revival. It could even be Enzo faking it. It could be somebody else that we don't know. And they all kind of make sense. So I'm digging a little Jessica Fletcher murder mystery we've got going on here on Raw.
It's kind of fun. Between this and the Kurt Angle thing with Corey Graves, they're offering these long-term mysteries that keep me interested and intrigued. And I think it's exactly what Enzo and Cass needed, actually.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's what they needed. They needed something interesting to kind of keep them going. We have the Intercontinental Championship comeback tour. Maurice and The Miz are in the ring. They've got balloons. There's a bear holding a congratulations sign, which I think everybody on the planet thought the bear was Dean Ambrose. Of course.
Yeah. The second, it was great because I was watching it, and Val, she goes, oh, the bear's Dean Ambrose. And I go, you just got that? and like, she figured out immediately, too. That's what was so great about it. But it was so obvious and so telegraphed that I knew it was coming, like, automatically off the bat, right?
And then there's, like, the great thing is, there's a You Deserve It chant for The Miz, and he's like, yeah, that would mean more if you didn't do it for every single wrestler who wins a title. Oh, God, he's so good.
That's his best line that he's ever given.
It was so good. It shut them up immediately. He's gonna restore the IC title to the glory and the heights that it once knew. They have champagne glasses, and you know, Miz is praising Maryse, you know, thanks for the setup and the bear, and she's like, I didn't get the bear. And he said, well, I didn't get the bear. So he turns and then attacks the bear and gives him a skull-crushing finale, and it's not Dean Ambrose. So then, there's a big box on the outside, so he attacks it with a chair and jumps on it, and he opens it up, and it's a destroyed...
Jumps on it like Ric Flair, no less.
Like Ric Flair would beat up a jacket, and it turns out he's destroyed a grandfather clock that Maryse bought him. And then Maryse just runs away because she's enraged because she spent like fucking half of her month's salary in a grandfather clock. Miz ended up, you know, calling for Dean Ambrose to show himself, and Ambrose was a cameraman. Miz spotted him, tried to attack him, but it was too late. Dirty deeds. Ambrose takes a drink of champagne and takes the bottle to the back. Congratulations, Dean Ambrose. This was superb.
Not only congratulations to Dean Ambrose, but also a big congratulations to The Miz and Maryse here.
This was so good, the three of them. And you know what? I want to see Miz versus Ambrose again! I can't believe it! I want to see it one more time!
I don't know what it is that they've managed to do here. But like, and the dynamic too, where Maryse gets her feelings hurt and walks away. It's like Dean is driving a wedge in their relationship now. And that's a really fun dynamic, I think. It gives it a new facet to this feud that we've seen fizzle out for so long now that I'm okay with it for one final standoff. And they needed this if they were going to swap the title, because they can't just swap the title and that's that, right? They needed to swap the title and have the rematch. So if they're saving this, like, best-for-last kind of thing for this, I'm all about it, man. I think they're doing a great job with it.
Yep, it was really, really strong. Good stuff. So then we got Gallows and Anderson coming out. Enzo's partner is The Big Show. The Big Show, I mean, I guess he could now be one of the suspects as well.
Yet another person to throw into the mix.
They beat the club relatively quickly because The Big Show trumps over everybody. And, right. Yeah, it was fine. I mean, I'm not crazy about the club being used in 90-second squashes, but I guess if it's The Big Show, it's more acceptable. But
I want the club to go away for a little bit, I think.
I want them to go to SmackDown. That's it.
Yes, please. Please.
Cass appears to have recovered, though, and he's comes up to Enzo and Big Show, and basically he's like, Cass has said that, you know, Big Show's been away for a few weeks, now he shows up when Enzo needs a tag team partner, and Show said if it was him, he'd be coming for him straight on, he wouldn't be attacking them from behind. Enzo's trying to ease the tension by, like, saying, oh, let's go to the casino, and then Show just kind of says, oh, and you go. So they go, they're away to casino, the plot thickens. And yeah, I have no idea who it is, but I'm excited to see what it turns out to be.
Yeah, no, like I said, I like these overarching storylines, man. It brings intrigue and interest to the product. It's just something different, you know?
And it's good. We get an R-Truth video, a Truth Be Told production, where he gives some quotes like A Few Good Men and Pulp Fiction stuff. I don't think they're as good as the Goldust promos, but they are good, no. And they're a step above what R-Truth usually does.
Yeah, no. It's good stuff, and it's noteworthy, and it's... the thing is about... Here's the thing, Kenny. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. This feud gives something for both of these guys to do that was way better than anything they were doing before, and they both look like bigger stars coming out of it. Somehow. I don't know how, but somehow.
Miracles can happen.
Yeah. But kudos to both of these guys. That's the reason, is they're good, you know? They're good on the mic. They know what they're doing. They're seasoned veterans, Kenny.
They are. We then get Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax. Dana and Mickie are at ringside. Alexa tries to leave. And then, basically... When Alexa's on the outside, Alexa punches both of them. They then hit her back, which caused Nia Jax to be disqualified. Then Nia Jax gets Alexa Bliss back in the ring. Alexa Bliss basically is a genius, essentially, because she managed to lure Mickie James and Dana Brooke out there and then managed to get herself disqualified. Like, great. And it was great. It was really good. I enjoyed it. And I think that people want to see Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss for whatever reason, and it's kind of working. Nia Jax just...
The crowd popped huge for Nia Jax whenever they announced that the match would be tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. I'm not big on it like you are. I thought it was a really dumb finish. But
for the baby faces.
But, like, making the majority of your women's roster look weak or stupid, which is essentially what's happened since now... these two look like idiots, especially Mickey. I mean, come on, Mickey. How long you been around? You know better than that. And then on top of all of that, then you have Bailey, who had to sit at home after getting whacked with a stick once or twice. It's like, come on.
I think,
you know?
I think with Mickey James, I'm sad that she looks like an idiot, but Dana Brooke, I mean, I couldn't give a shit.
Right.
I say that now until I have to interview her, but I'm like, Dana, I really loved your character work that we called. Yeah.
You cheeky bastard.
Anyway, Paul Heyman's backstage. He is on the phone to Brock Lesnar. He's told Brock he needs to come back next week and unleash the beast. Does that mean that Brock Lesnar is going to destroy Kalisto? I'm very excited.
Oh, could happen.
Oh, can you imagine if he F5'd him off the stage? Oh my god. It'd be so good. So Brock's coming back next week. That should be good. Main event time, Samoa Joe versus Seth Rollins. The match is pretty decent. Goes about 15 minutes. And as Rollins is kind of got the match under control, the Bray Wyatt video flashes. Rollins looks around like an idiot. And Samoa Joe gets a coquina clutch in and gets the win at 15 minutes. And, you know, that's kind of the end. Samoa Joe is victorious. Brock Lesnar's coming back next week. What did you think of the main event and the end to the show?
The final 30 minutes or so of this show, like the last two segments, I'm going to mirror a lot of what Brian Alvarez said on Wrestling Observer Live, so I apologize. I'm essentially lifting what he had to say, because for this main event, Brian just knocked it out of the park. He said, you have to look at the way, I'm paraphrasing, of course, you have to look at the way that they book Samoa Joe here. Would they ever book Brock Lesnar this way? And the answer is, of course not. Brock Lesnar would come in and have that match solely in hand against a guy like Seth Rollins, and he would win cleanly. He wouldn't win due to a distraction. He wouldn't need it. And so if you're building up a guy to be a legitimate star, which Joe certainly looked the part after the Paul Heyman incident, right? But you would never book a guy who's going up against Brock Lesnar to need assistance in any way to dispatch a guy like Seth Rollins. Now, it shouldn't be a squash like the way that Brock squashed Cena at SummerSlam a few years back, but it should be a lot more handed than it was. It should have been a little lopsided, and it should have made Joe look like a legitimate contender, which... with 50-50 booking, he needed the distraction in order to secure the win. It's not like he was on the verge of losing, but the distraction, no doubt, undoubtedly, certainly helped. I don't see how anyone could argue that. Seth got distracted by Bray, and he lost because of it. So you would never see Brock Lesnar booked that way, so I think it was a step back after building Joe masterfully in the first segment that he was in.
I think that with the last half hour of the show certainly dragged, and while Alexa looked like a genius, sadly Mickie James looked like an idiot. But I don't think that really matters. But I think the thing that's interesting is that I think that of the two big matches on the show, Samoa Joe, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns, Bray Wyatt, that you could have done the interference in the Roman Bray Wyatt match with somebody else, but I think Samoa Joe should have probably beat him clean here.
Yeah.
I don't think it's anything where, like, it's going to really hurt the build to Joe and Les or anything. I don't think it's irreversible. I just think it's a kind of tiny detail that would have been nicer. I get that they wanted to start the Seth Rollins Bray Wyatt thing that they're going to do, but I think they would probably had more impact if Samoa Joe had managed to beat Seth Rollins and then post-match Seth Rollins was there and then Bray attacked him. That would have been a nice story to tell.
Right, right. Something afterwards. Also, whenever that happened with Bray, I just turned to the wife and we both looked at each other like, well, I guess we know who Bray's losing to next.
See, I'm actually looking forward to this because I could actually see Bray beating Seth. Because it's not one of the... It's not the Roman Reigns person. It's not Finn Balor.
Hold on one second. I'm slapping my knee because what you said was a fucking knee slapper.
I'm just ignoring
Bray Wyatt winning a feud. That's funny.
Anyway.
Okay, I'm done.
I think Bray Wyatt has a chance for this one because Seth Rollins is a guy who... Like, it all depends what they're doing with Seth Rollins. If Seth Rollins is due to get a title shot against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, which I don't think he is, then you kind of need to keep him as a main event guy. If not, then he can kind of lurk around the undercard of it, or the underling of the main event scene. And I don't really think it matters if Seth Rollins beats Bray Wyatt or Bray Wyatt beats Seth Rollins. Either of them could beat the other, and it would be fine. They're both in the same kind of level, really, for me. But I guess we'll see where it goes. They should have a good match at Great Balls of Fire. What would you give this show as an overall score, David?
I liked this show. I thought that it was a very stellar show. It had the best segment in a very, very, very long time on Raw. I loved the Samoa Joe thing. I thought that it kind of made Joe a star. Actually, for the first time on the main roster, the win at Extreme Rules was big, but moments like that are bigger than who wins and loses. I think it's stuff like that that people remember. They don't necessarily remember the winners and losers of matches. So stuff like that that propels feuds and adds a little bit of fire, adds some kindling to the fire, I should say. I like stuff like that a lot. I would give the show an 8 out of 10. It dragged in the last hour a bit, but man, that Joe stuff was good, and the Miz stuff was excellent at the start of the third hour, though.
8's also my score as well. I thought it was a really good show. I thought the Roman Reigns Bray Wyatt match was really, really good. I thought the Miz and Ambrose stuff was really strong. Really, the fact that they make me want to see that match again is amazing.
Yeah, it's a testament to both guys, no doubt.
Love the threads of the Kurt Angle story and the Enzo and Cass stories. They're both interesting.
Excellent stuff.
Samoa Joe segment was the highlight of the night, and it was tremendous. Nice to see the Cruiserweight stuff with Neville and TJP. The Goldust video was good. There was a bunch of shit on this show that was really good. Not that much cross. So I would give it an 8 out of 10 as well.
Yeah, really good show.
So, David, where can people, since you're not going to be back for another 2 weeks on this podcast, give us your Twitter handle so people can remember where to find you.
You can get me at Zoopsoul, Zoopsoul. I will be working E3 next week with GameSpot, where I work Monday through Friday. And so it's going to be a hell of a show. And there will be a few surprise guests on my Twitter, so you may want to stay tuned. You might catch a glimpse of some personalities, some wrestling personalities that you may know from week to week. I'm excited.
There you go. The tease has begun. Thanks for listening, everybody. You can get me on Twitter, KennyMC1985. I will be back with Sondra for the SmackDown summary. There's some Patreon exclusive stuff coming up this week of podcasts. A Fave 5 with Sondra and I talking our Fave 5 women's wrestling matches. We're doing one in Lucha Underground. Robert and I are doing a Patreon podcast on the Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho feud from 2008. Tons of stuff going up, and we'll be back for Retro Raw as well as on Patreon, the King of the Ring 97 review from Sondra and I. You can also check out David and I talking Extreme Rules. That's a lot of podcast stuff to get through, so...
Kenny, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Did Alundra Blaze versus Bull Nakano make your list?
Of course it did.
Because you know me, I love me some Bull Nakano. Now that was a woman.
Now I tell you the one that missed my list, but I wish that. Do you remember the 1995 Survivor Series with Aja Kong?
Yeah, I do.
I am devastated that the Aja Kong and Alundra Blaze match at was it Royal Rumble 96 that was supposed to happen did not take place.
Yeah.
That would have been tremendous.
It would have. Alundra Blaze, excellent. A lot of these people who listen to our show are a bit younger, and so they do not know the wonders that was Medusa. So, yeah, look it up. She's amazing. And Bull Nakano, woo! Number one on my all-time hottest women's wrestlers, Kenny.
Agreed. Very, very attractive. She got that. There's something about Mary here just right.
Oh, yeah. Woo! What
okay. So there we go, folks. This has been the Raw Rundown. Thank you very much for listening and supporting us in all the ways that you do. Tons of content coming your way, as always. And remember, at the end of this month, we will have Goldberg in the UK. First time he's ever sat down and spoke of his career at length. Brock Lesnar, WCW, Starrcade 98, everything that you could want to possibly know, we will talk about. InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets. And David, I hope you enjoy your week off from podcasting.
Oh, Lord mercy. After working from 8 a.m. to 3 a.m. or whatever I'm going to be working, I would really love to talk to you by comparison, Kenny. Talking to you is like a 16-hour day of work is basically what I'm saying.
Thanks, I guess.
burying this shit. Hey, I'm on the way out. I'm just lifting up the middle fingers and pew, 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 throwing them shits up as I'm walking backwards out this motherfucking door. Later, bitches.
Bye. Don't know what's happening. No idea.